This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We're talking about all things integrative cardiology related with one of America's foremost complementary cardiologists. He's Dr. Steven Sinatra, known to many of you. He writes a column for Intelligent Medicine. Of course, he's got his own great website at heartmdinstitute.com, also drsinatra.com. And we're taking up the theme during this segment of the cholesterol myth. You actually wrote a book by that title recently. Right. You got even a cholesterol myth cookbook, right? So
yeah, I do. Yeah.
Why do you turn, you know, you're a cardiologist. I mean, you're turning your back on one of the key paradigms that all your colleagues cherish and hold dearest. What's up with that?
Well, you know, I'll tell you this, Ron. I mean, cholesterol, it is a risk factor for the heart. I mean, but it's very, very small. I mean, it's really blown out of proportion. I mean, it creates some element of inflammation in the body. There's no doubt about it. But to kill it the way we do is, I mean, I think we get negative consequences from it. I mean, we need cholesterol. I mean, let's face it. I mean, cholesterol is the basis of all our steroid hormones, you know, mm-hmm. our testosterone, our estrogen. It lubricates the skin. It's something that is involved in neurotransmission. I mean, one of the reasons why we see a lot of forgetfulness or Alzheimer's-like symptoms in patients treated with statin drugs when cholesterol numbers get driven way down, I mean, we have to have cholesterol for neurotransmission in the brain. I mean, we need it. And, you know, why kill something that is vital for the body? Remember mm-hmm. this, our bile salts for digestion comes from cholesterol. Mm-hmm. Cholesterol, like, lubricates our skin, and it helps to form vitamin D, you know, when the sun hits the skin. And then the other thing, too, which is important, is cholesterol is really vital for infections. You know, one of the infections that affects kids, what's it called, that staph coagulase positive situation, you know, where you get a necrotizing staphylococcal skin infection that can kill you. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the higher your cholesterol is, the more protection you have against that.
Impetigo or something along those lines?
Well, yeah, I mean, even skin conditions. Yeah, mm-hmm. skin conditions, even patients who have gastrointestinal distress, you know, when they have low cholesterol, that seems to be accentuated. So, you know, as a cardiologist, I don't want to kill cholesterol. Mm-hmm. You know, now, are there situations where you have familial hypercholesterolemia? You know, you were dealt a bad set of genes. You have cholesterols of 400, 500, 600.
People with cholesterol,
your blood becomes like red ketchup
on their skin, you know, literally, yeah.
Right. Under these circumstances, I mean, sure, you know, I would use statin drugs, especially if they had far advanced heart disease. But remember, statin drugs, they happen to lower cholesterol. There's no doubt about it. But the way they're really working, mm-hmm. which I believe, is that they're incredible blood thinners.
Expensive,
you know,
aspirin.
And whenever you thin the blood, yeah. I mean, you know, you get a therapeutic response. So if you turn your red ketchup blood into like red wine, you know, you're going to get a better oxygen delivery. So I'm a big fan of thinning the blood. That's why I really love earthing and grounding, because, you know, that thins the blood. But again, statin drugs, you know, they're powerful antioxidants. You know, and again, you know, they just do some good things. They do some bad things. But if I had a young male, you know, under the age of 75, and I consider that young, if I have a young male with proven coronary disease, I'll use a statin, low-dose statin, but mm-hmm. I'll use it with coenzyme Q10. Mm-hmm. And now would I use a statin in children? Very, very rarely. Would I use it in women? Again, rarely. Mm-hmm. Do I use statins in the elderly? You know, men over 75? No.
It's not been demonstrated to be helpful. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, you got to use subsets of the population. And see, the problem with statins is that they're given to men, women, children, old, young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the side effect profile, you know, can be extraordinarily, bad in certain populations, mm-hmm. especially the elderly and the women population.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of statins in women. I think women get more side effects.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm often called upon, as you probably are, to do a second opinion on people who've been told they need statins. And often we'll see somebody whose cholesterol is, I don't know, 220 or 235. So automatically the doctor wants to put them on a statin. And I got a call from a radio listener, and I think their cholesterol was, I don't know, 230 or something, but they had an HDL of 140. They also had, and I said, well, you need to get a scan to see if you have an HDL, the good cholesterol. And so I said, well, you need to get a scan to see if, I mean, by some perchance, maybe that HDL isn't protecting you. And they said, well, I did get a scan, and I have zero plaque. The doctor still wanted to put them on a statin drug,
just
per the number. You know, which, I mean, they've actually just come up with a statistic that if you have a calcium scan, an EBT heart scan, and you have zero plaque, you've got 18 years before you have any cardiovascular risk whatsoever. So, you know, what's going on out there, as you know, is absolutely ridiculous. It's paint-by-numbers medicine, cookie-cutter medicine,
right,
where doctors...
Treating numbers, not patients.
Exactly. So, you know, and I guess that's what you're talking about. So when it comes to diet, you know, I think there's been some personal evolution with both of us. You know, I think when we met, we were sort of, I don't know, sort of plant-based diet fans, you know, lots of whole grains.
Yep.
And I think we both evolved a little bit in the direction of a lower-carb diet, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm a big fan of the higher protein, higher fat diet, lower carb. Remember, the carbohydrates release insulin, not so much protein and fats, but the carbohydrates release insulin. And we realize that insulin is the most pro-inflammatory hormone. So if you're getting lots of carbs in your diet, lots of sugary carbs, and you're releasing packets of insulin all the time, it's no wonder we get inflammation of our blood vessels. And if you get inflammation of the blood vessels, that sets the stage for plaque and, you know, ugly cholesterol deposits, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's a steady downhill course. So one of the best ways of treating, you know, Americans and just, you know, everybody that we come in contact with is really less sugar, less carbs, more healthy proteins, more healthy fats. And that's the best way of eating. And I think that, you know, if I had to choose a diet, I coined the term the PAM diet, P-A-M-M, the mm-hmm. Pan-Asian Modified Mediterranean. I wrote about that in my books over the last, oh my gosh, 20 years. So if you eat like a Japanese person or like somebody from the Mediterranean basin, you're in great shape.
Yeah, that's the best aspects of both diets because those are those are blue zones when it comes to cardiovascular disease, for sure.
Yeah, and take, let's say, one food that's common in both diets. Avocados are common in both. Artichokes are common in both. You know, great foods to eat. Olive oil is common in both, even though, you know, the Japanese use less certainly than the Mediterranean's. But there's so many, you know, common foods. I call them anti-aging foods. I call them, you know, the foods that help prevent inflammation. And that's one of the secret ways of eating. If you can prevent inflammation, you're going in the right direction.
Indeed. And, you know, I don't know if you've been following this, but there's some new think on exercise that, and I've had a few patients in my practice who are very high-end exercisers. They're guys in their 50s and 60s who literally ride hundreds of miles a week on their bicycles or they do ultra marathons. And some of them, surprisingly, have arterial plaque and or they develop enlarged hearts with arrhythmias. And so, you know, what's your view on that?
Yeah, as a cardiologist, I saw that all the time. I mean, you know, exercise is sort of on a U-shaped curve. Mm-hmm. If you don't do enough of it, you're in trouble. And if you do too much of it, like marathon running, I believe is too much exercise. You know, I mean, there's lots of sudden deaths that occur in marathons. I mean, you know, and racquetball is another sport that I'm not a big fan of because it's start, stop. But, you know, exercise is really good for the heart, but there's a sweet spot and there's a U-shaped curve. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of interval running, by the way. I mean, You know, a lot of people want me to endorse books on exercise. And, right. you know, interval training, I think, has a downside.
High-intensity like interval training, HIIT,
yes.
you know, that's
yes.
supposed to be the most efficient
way to exercise.
You know,
where you walk a few
exercise.
Steps, run, yeah. you know, you run, you walk. Yeah. You know, for somebody under the age of 40, Ron, that's fine. But somebody yeah. our age, yeah. no, it's you got to take it off the table because the start, stop, you know, can be a stress for the heart. There's no, mm-hmm. there's no question about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. So, you know, I think there really a more balanced approach is called for, especially, you know, when you reach a certain age and you want to still engage in heroics. I have to kind of curb my enthusiasm on that front sometimes, too, because I tend to go overboard. I think what the best combination might be a combination of, you know, some aerobics, some strength training, because you want to maintain muscle mass.
Yes.
And then some of the, you know, relaxing Eastern practices like Tai Chi or yoga.
Oh, absolutely.
Maintaining flexibility. I mean, what we're talking about here is not so much pound on the pavement, but movement, maintaining
right.
Fluid movement and flexibility.
I think the best exercises are swimming, cycling, certainly, you know, for recreational cycling. I think walking the dog is probably number one. I really do. I think walking a dog is the best form of exercise. It's good for the dog and it's good for you.
And there's probably some psychoneuroimmunology points that you get from interacting with a dog.
Of course, they love it, and they give you unconditional love, and if you take that in, oh my gosh, it's awesome.
And indeed. Yeah, actually, there was an article recently that talked about yeah, it's one of those clickbait articles, but I think it was based on a study that showed that when you look at all things considered, and weigh beneficial diet versus stress optimization actually turns out to be more beneficial. It actually trumps, if you'll excuse the expression, it trumps, you know, diet
right.
adherence.
I mean, like one of the reasons why I became a certified psychotherapist and I studied Gestalt psychotherapy for 2 years and bioenergetics for 8 years and went through a certification program is I think the emotions are, you know, much more of a cause of heart disease, than, you know, dietary considerations. I mean, emotionality is huge. I mean, how many times have we seen patients with rage and held in anger mm-hmm. or bursts of anger, have dissection of the aorta, have myocardial infarction mm-hmm. or heart attacks? I mean, it's amazing. But, you know, anger and actually worse than, you know, rage is uncontrolled anger, but that's the Achilles heel for the heart. It's like driving a car with your brakes on.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a form of total peripheral resistance goes up and it could be a killer.
It's actually a form of cardiac failure. It's called Takotsubo. Heart failure, where, you know,
catecholamine necrosis, they call it.
What's
surges of epinephrine and adrenaline. Yeah, it's surges of adrenaline mm-hmm. that's released that actually it becomes toxic to the myocardial cells, and you develop patchy necrosis of the heart or cell death of the heart, and that's a deal breaker. It really is. It could kill you. Mm-hmm. So I would tell our listeners this, you know. My old mentor, Dr. Bob Elliott, he was a board-certified cardiologist. He said, don't sweat the small stuff. Mm. And it's all small stuff anyway, he would say. And, you know, just don't get angry or enraged on something because it could kill you. Mm-hmm. It really could. Those are the emotions that that can be really dreadful in people when, you know, they're vulnerable. So
I shouldn't get upset because my dishwasher broke? No, okay.
You can get upset, but... You can get upset, but I'll tell you one thing. If you held in your anger, that's not good. If you had a little bit of anger and rage, you know, a little bit of, you know, outward anger, that's okay. The best thing, Ron, the very best thing that'll cure you is to cry about it. Sob about it. Crying is the one emotion that heals the heartbreak and the intense anxieties and the held in emotions that we all have. But once you cry and you release those emotions, mm-hmm. that's the most healing aspect for the heart. I wrote about that in Heartbreak and Heart Disease. You know, that was one of my best books. I wrote it in my early 40s. And, you know, I just feel that crying is the one emotion that rescues the heart.
Yeah, that's interesting because as men, of course, we're conditioned not to cry from our earliest childhood. You know, we're supposed to buck it up and hold it in. And I think that's very deleterious. And it's hard for me to cry. But occasionally a movie will get me choked up. But I actually find that going to religious services, you reach a certain emotional level that sometimes releases that sort of pent up heart energy, and it manifests in, you know, the sort of, you release the sadness. It sort of comes out.
Oh, that's so beautifully said. I got a hot chill on that. So the angels are telling me what you said is totally correct. If religious services touch you, it touches a part of you that touches your sadness. I would go to religious services all the time, Ron, because you'd be healing your heart.
Indeed.
You'll literally be healing your heart.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt about it, you know? See, one of the reasons why I think we see so much heart disease nowadays in women, you know, when I graduated medical school, I graduated Albany in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw a woman in the coronary care unit. Ron, I thought women didn't get heart disease, you know?
Yeah.
Because I never saw a heart attack in a woman, you know, all through medical school. Then when I became chief of cardiology at my institution in the 80s and mid-90s, the coronary care units were full of women. Mm. And, you know, I wrote about this in my books and stuff, and it was sort of very perplexing to me. But, you know, when a woman has to be like a woman, act like a man, and then work like a dog, mm-hmm. and that's a scenario that we're seeing today
in women.
And
smoke like a man, too, you know, because that's something.
Yes.
That's a kind of a sociocultural thing that really changed, you know, right around the time that a lot of women who are now older began to mature. I think it became acceptable for women to smoke probably during World War II. That was right around the time where it actually became. And, of course, you look at a lot of the movies from the 1930s, and you see these elegant people offering each other cigarettes, and you start to see this wasn't the case in 1890, you know, during the Victorian era in America. I mean,
right.
Yeah, men would go to the smoking room and retire. There actually was a place where the guys would go after dinner, and then the women would stick together. But the women weren't smoking. I guess maybe, you know, they had their closet smoking. That's part of it, I think, too.
Yeah. No, it is. I think a greater part, though, because I really thought, because, you know, I've written over 22 books, and I think about this all the time, mm-hmm. and, you know, and like, I think, you know, when women have infiltrated the workplace, mm-hmm. Like a perfect example, when I went to medical school, I had four women in my class. Out of a class mm-hmm. of like 67, we had four women. Now in that same medical school class, which is like 120, there's like 75 to 80 women. So now women have become, you know, like there's more doctors and stuff like that. I as an example. But what I've noticed is that, you know, when you have women in the workplace, and I have nothing against women being in the workplace. I mean, you know, let's put that on the table right off the bat. But once you start using your left brain more than your right brain, I really feel that women are more intuitive than men because they're women. You know, they're softer. They cry more than us. And they're more right-brained, and they're more intuitive. But once you betray your intuition, I think intuition is the greatest gift that both men have and women have, but women have it greater than men. The problem is, if you have a woman in the workplace who shuts off her intuition, and she doesn't cry, she doesn't rely on her intuition, she doesn't rely on her inner wisdom, I think she invites a male-oriented disease into her life, and that's heart disease.
Hmm.
And, you know, now speaking more like a psychotherapist,
yep.
you know, but I am a cardiologist,
mm-hmm.
but I have to tell you, I just feel that, you know, when a woman betrays her inner wisdom, then heart disease is a considerable factor. And that's why I think we're seeing a lot more heart disease in younger and younger women today.
Yeah, it's interesting because notwithstanding the fact that women are entering the workplace, they also have the simultaneous responsibility of being prime caregivers for kids. You know, men can't seem to fully assume that role. So you really get stretched between taking care of your parents, taking care of your kids, and, you know, being a star in the workplace. And that's sometimes a very deadly mix for
and being a caretaker and being a chauffeur
yeah.
and being, you know, the list goes on. And that's the problem. I mean, you know, they're multitasking. And when you multitask to that degree, something's got to give.
Indeed.
And well, frequently it's the heart.
So, these days, what are you working on? I hear you're working on a project where you're sourcing non-GMO foods.
Yeah, you know what? You know what I did with vitamins. I started making, you know, with Raj Chopra at TishCon years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, I started doing vitamins and minerals in the '90s, and that was really good. And I've always been a proponent of healthy food, But now the food has changed in our societies. I mean, it's full of heavy metals. It's full of insecticides and pesticides. Now we've got the glycophosphates to deal with, and now there's genetically modified foods, the soybeans, the corn. I mean, the list goes on and on. So I developed a website called Vervana, V-E-R-V-A-N-A. And Ron, every year for the last few years...
V-E-R-V-A-N-A,
Vervana.
Okay. It's sort of like Nirvana.
V-E-R-V-A-N-A.
Yeah, it's like Nirvana, but with a V-E-R instead of...
Yeah, with a V, Vervana.
Okay.
And I'm sure you know about the health food show that's on, the west side of town. Not the Columbus Center. What's that center on the west side of town? It's like acres and acres of
Hudson Yards.
It's near there. It's one exhibit after another.
Oh.
And it's the health food show every year. And I got to tell you, I've been going there for the last few years. And I've been seeking out these high vibrational.
You're talking about the Javits Center, which is like the main convention center in New York City. Yeah,
the convention center.
It's huge. Yeah.
And the health food show there is unbelievable.
Wow.
But I'll tell you, when I go on the floors, I specifically are looking for these high vibrational foods. You know, no insecticides, no pesticides, non-GMO, no heavy metals, no BPA. Like I even found there was a vendor there that had a tuna fish. That was tested for BPA and for mercury, and I bought it. You know what I mean? Because it was a healthy tuna.
So what you're doing is you're sort of curating, with your orientation and your expertise, all the top products that you think should be made available to the public.
Exactly, and a lot of them I'm having manufactured myself. Like I had this pasta sauce manufactured in a green facility in Ohio. Mm-hmm. Where it's non-GMO tomatoes and everything's organic and there's no BPA in it. It passes California Prop 6-5. Mm. I mean, the pasta sauce is so bright red and it tastes so good. And, I lowered the salt, I lowered the sugar, I added more garlic. And basically, I think one of the secrets to healthy eating today is bringing foods, high vibrational foods that literally, help to resurrect our tired cells in our body and really give us more almost like a vitamin and mineral effect without taking vitamins and minerals, although I'm a big fan of vitamins and minerals, and you know that. But I think high vibrational foods right now is the answer to a lot of these dead foods, these sugary foods, or these foods that are contaminated with so many artificial ingredients. So that's my next business. And I need it like a hole in the head because I'm over 70 years old.
Yeah.
But anyway... I just feel that
I thought you were going to kind of rest on your laurels, but I guess you just got the fire in the belly for a new enterprise, so that's great. It's Vervana.com, right?
Right, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so let's repeat where people can get more information. Obviously, they can subscribe to a newsletter at heartmdinstitute.com, and of course, there are always great articles there, some of which we republished at...
Free. All that stuff is free, even drsinatra.com. There's loads of information on all those websites about the heart and high blood pressure, and I mean, you name it, but it's all free. It's all free.
Good stuff. All right.
Remember, the newsletter people had to buy years ago, but now with the internet, I mean, the right thing to do is just give the information away, because look, what do you do in your life, Ron? You empower people. That's why your radio show is such a success. People listen to your show and they feel empowered.
We're getting the word out. Yeah.
And that's all we want to do is just make people their own docs,
Indeed. Well, hey, congratulations on, just a stellar career and for being really an inspiration to me personally, because I follow your work very carefully and you've really been a pioneer in helping patients with heart problems, and that's really transferred to my patients as well. So thanks for that. And thanks for sharing with our listeners and continue the great work, continue getting the word out. And we recommend that followers of Intelligent Medicine also look to heartmdinstitute.com for great cutting-edge information. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Stephen Sinatra.
Oh, thanks, Ron. It was great to be here, and thanks for, again, a great interview.
Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.